Welcome back, everyone, to Understanding Climate Finance. My name is Fahim Nurali, and I'm the Climate Finance Trade Commissioner based out of the Embassy of Canada in Washington, D.C. I'm really excited about our episode today because we get to talk about a subject that, in my opinion, is kind of esoteric and really becoming increasingly important. You may be familiar with the terms Web3 and regenerative finance, but not really sure what they mean or how they apply to climate. You may even be skeptical of Web3 or decentralized technology in light of what we see in the crypto space, which in my mind is actually pretty unrelated. Our guest today will help clear that up. Anna Lerner is a strategic senior leader with expansive technology, partnership, and social impact experience across Europe, Africa, South America, and North America. She's an economist by training, and she's spent over 15 years driving frontier tech adoption, climate finance, and data innovations at institutions such as GIZ, the Global Environmental Facility, and the World Bank. Most recently, she led strategy at Meta, you may know them as Facebook, for their United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and Global Strategic Partners Program. As of last September, Anna's taken on the role as Chief Executive Officer of the Climate Collective, a network of climate stakeholders utilizing Web3 infrastructure to unlock innovative and verifiable climate action at scale. This is particularly exciting for me because Anna is a former colleague from our time at the World Bank, and I've always appreciated her passion for the work that she's done, her accomplishments while she was there, and most importantly, her ability to find and describe innovative solutions to existing issues. So thanks, Anna, so much for being here.
Thank you. That's such a nice introduction. Thanks for being here. You should say former colleague and friend.
Former colleague and friend. Yeah, of course. We definitely had a great time while we were at the World Bank, and we were working on a really interesting Nigeria project, which I actually, just as a side note, met some of the people that are running that project now. So it's nice to see that some of our work has actually come to fruition.
That's awesome. What you always hope for, that like you plant these little seeds and they will continue and grow into real things.
Yeah, he had joked, as we were at a conference once, and he had joked that he's like, thank you for creating my job for me. I'm like, great. I'm glad to know it worked out.
Perfect.
So I thought we could kick off our conversation just as a primer. If you could share with us, what is regenerative finance and Web3 and how do they relate and how is that an evolution to what we've seen in the past or, you know, what have development finance has been?
Yes. And this is a great question. And I am a development economist by training. So this topic gets to the heart of my interests. So in our current economic system, I would say that economic health or economic growth or progress is defined in terms of production and consumption, but dismissing the cost or ignoring the cost of pollution and natural resource consumption, not pricing in these externalities and the cost of the activities. And this results in negative impact on our finite natural resources, which, as we all know, has quite impactful and very negative effects on the world. So this broader concept of regenerative economics focuses on building systems that restore and preserve environmental resources and ecosystem services that are essential for planetary health. And regenerative finance, then, that you asked about, is a subsector that combines this broader mission of regeneration with a sector called decentralized finance, that's called DeFi, new technologies, advances in technologies, and advanced data analytics. So fundamentally, this is an approach that tries to internalize the cost and the benefits of changes to natural resources and creates incentives for people and organizations and institutions to take planet-positive actions and economic decisions. And you and I, we worked a lot on sustainability programs, and I think that's sort of been the norm in international development for quite a while, the sustainable development goals and all of that. And personally, I would say that regenerative programs are more ambitious than sustainability programs. So sustainability, by definition, the way I see it, is more about maintaining the current state, so developing in a way that maintains the balance, whereas regenerative is more about restore the environment to its former state.
That's really interesting and then really sort of addresses the gap. Like you said, in economics, kind of looking at regenerative finance and how that applies to Web3. Can you kind of describe that? In your CEO announcement, you had said that the core tenet of Web3, transparency, coordination, trust, decentralization, and scalability all have significant roles to play in combating the climate crisis. Can we dig into that a little bit more?
Yes. Yeah. Well, taking a step back, I think we need a digitized environmental and climate sector. So what do I mean with that? Well, a lot of different sectors over the last, 10, 15 years have entered into what World Economic Forum calls the fourth industrial revolution. So this sort of new level of industrial era where everything is powered by data and technology and sensors and decisions are informed and smart and all of that. And data and these digital technologies have generated massive advances, cost savings, standardizations, and efficiency gains to most sectors in society. So you think of remote learning or e-learning or, remote health or e-commerce, to just mention a few that impact sort of our day-to-day lives. But the environment and climate sector has really lagged behind when it comes to this digital revolution or digital transformation, which has made mobilizing climate finance and building trust and accountability in this system much harder and slower. So what do we need to create this digitized climate movement? I think we need a combination of, IoT, hardware sensors, some advanced data processing, machine learning, artificial intelligence, but also merging this, building this on top of a financial system with more accountability that is decentralized. And all of these, which then is blockchain, I should say, and all of these systems and technologies have made a lot of advances in the last decade, which has allowed us to sort of sit at this intersection right now where the awareness of the urgent need for decarbonization and scaling up climate finance is here, is real. And we've had this advances in technology and solutions that are available now, lower cost, more sort of ubiquitous. And I think this has unlocked a lot of investment and increased available climate finance and climate solutions. And all of these features have been integral to starting this shift towards a net zero economy.
So just on the climate finance thing, just for clarification, you're saying how would this help mobilize? Is it more tracking where climate finance is going, or will it, we have a lot of climate finance commitments, both from the public sector and the private sector, which haven't been fulfilled, quite frankly. How would this help that mobilization, or how would that, where would we see a difference in this newer technology?
Yeah, great question. So I think, the climate finance landscape, as you very well know, is vastly complex and political, which makes this really complicated. But to try to break down some of the opportunities that I'm seeing, one is around the accountability. So you have all these, pledges from national governments, but also net zero commitments from corporations that are, well-intended and I think extremely important as a market signal for the importance of decarbonization, but not necessarily executed, or maybe executed really well, but we just don't know about it. We have very limited ways to actually know what decisions or investments corporations are making and if they're actually doing good on these pledges. And there's some organizations like the Science Based Target Initiative that are working to try to make sure that at least what they pledge is scientifically sound and, the right thing to do. And then others who are working on, the core carbon principles, like how can you claim that you make offsets? Can you claim high quality offsets? And, so that there's all these institutions around us that are trying to shore up this system and make sure that it's high quality, but not a lot has been done yet in terms of actual accountability and transparency of these claims. Even when I sat at the Global Environmental Facility, which is the GEF, which is the financing facility of the UNFCCC at the World Bank, and did these climate mitigation programs or investments, it is all paper-based, right? We received a project that we reviewed, was described in a Word document, paper-based, and it was very limited tools we had at our disposal to verify if this was, real. And then 5 years into the project development, we could maybe send someone out and check what's going on, but not just on project level and project finance level, but also then on aggregation, are these different projects actually adding up to where we need to be as a society? That is really unclear. And that's where I think a decentralized ledger, which is another word we can use for blockchain. And frankly, like sometimes I like to describe it just as like a glorified database, like a really smart, tamper-proof, decentralized database where all your actions and the impact of those actions can be tracked and shared. So that's one piece in terms of how this can really help accountability and like meaningfully complete the pledges that people do. Then the other piece, and this is really like a rabbit hole, and I'd love to go deep, deep down in this one day, but maybe more over drinks or a coffee than here. But then the other piece is this existing market mechanism that we have for carbon finance, so the voluntary carbon market, where we know that, you know, it's a John Oliver has made this very humoristic program about how bad it is. And I'm not saying it's a perfect instrument, but it is a market mechanism that exists, and it was worth $2 billion as of 2021. And a lot of experts expect this to grow by, you know, 9-10x in the upcoming years. And that is a way to channel investments into climate finance. I think last year we were around like $600 billion for climate finance, and McKinsey and others expect us to have to reach like $1 trillion or like $1.3 trillion by 2030. So we have a really long way to go. And using technology, for example, integrating technology in the voluntary carbon market to make it more efficient and therefore much more investable and attractive to investors is a really good way to try to unlock this. And that's again where I think blockchain, digital MRV, and this sort of distributed ledger, this improved accounting system can really help.
When you're looking at the technology, I guess the question that sort of comes to mind is, are we putting the technology before the standards are coming in? So, you know, we don't have good standards around scope 3 emissions, for example. So is this too soon? Like, what needs to happen in concert for all of this accountability to come together and for this to be really effective?
I think it needs to happen in parallel. I don't think we have time to like wait for standards and methodologies to be perfect before we start deploying capital. The reality is that there are investors out there that for lots of different reasons, you know, the attractive returns or like mission aligned investment criteria are willing to double down on investments in climate change and to support climate change and you know, technologies that address or support decarbonization. I think we need to crowd in all of that and make good use of it today. I think the learnings from those investments will also help us improve the systems and the methodologies. Like the voluntary carbon market is structured in a way that, like, I mean, if you would have drawn it up on paper a couple of years ago, like just doesn't make sense. There are too many intermediaries. It's completely opaque. There's just no transparency. That's not the way to structure a functional and effective market that can actually absorb large amount of private sector investments. So I think we need to do both at the same time. Let's deploy the technology we have. Let's learn from those deployments. And let's like really start to crowd in private sector capital to have a chance of even getting close to our climate goals.
So do you see talking to the different, I guess, public and private sector, but let's say private sector, for example, do you see them being excited about some of the work that you're doing and the new technology and how that can help accountability? Or do you find that there's some sort of resistance to that?
I think there's a lot of excitement. And there's a lot of excitement on lots of different aspects of this. So we have members in the Climate Collective that are working on supply side project finance, for example, unlocking like innovative financial instruments to direct more money into building high quality carbon supply, if you will, carbon supply projects. And there's a lot of interest in investing in those. The questions are always around like additionality or permanence, like how long, like let's say you invest in regeneration of forest or conservation of forest. What if, like, how long will those trees live? What if there's a, you know, there's always delivery risk. Delivery risk is this, you know, tricky thing when you do forward contracts. You invest in someone to deliver carbon credits in a couple of years, and like they just might not deliver the amount that you thought. So there are all kinds of complexities around doing these type of investments. But we're seeing everyone from sort of high net worth individuals and family offices to well-established traditional finance groups being really interested and starting to play around in this space. I think what's missing in many cases, and this is one thing that we're going to try to help out in 2023, but we'll get to that. But one of the things that we're seeing missing is like a maturity of this, you know, like it's just not a mature and liquid market quite yet. Mm-hmm. So supporting more standardized investments, instruments, and overall increasing liquidity in this market is, I think, really important to get to scale quickly.
That actually, that's a good segue into tell me more about the Climate Collective and some of the work that you're doing and how this alliance works.
Yeah, no, great question. And I'm, as you pointed out, quite new. I started in early September, so I'm still learning about the organization and its members, but it's been really super interesting couple of months. So the Climate Collective is a leading coalition of stakeholders, so from investors and nonprofit organizations to entrepreneurs and scientists that are leveraging trusted, sustainable Web3 infrastructure to unlock innovative and verifiable climate action at scale. Verifiable, important word there. So our mission is to build a trusted market for high-quality digital environmental assets that enable people and the planet to thrive. And a bit more simply put, I'd say we are an innovation network made up by people and organizations that believe in using digital technologies to unlock climate action at scale. And I think one of our key functions actually is to help cut through some of the hype surrounding blockchain and Web3 to make it easier to understand for the climate community, make it unsexy, if you will, and just really refocus this technology and its entrepreneurs on the real world applications that they're building and solving some of these very concrete barriers that the world is facing to reach decarbonization at a level that corresponds to our climate goals.
So looking at you know, some of your members, particularly the entrepreneurs that you mentioned, can you provide some examples of how you've supported these entrepreneurs in sort of advancing the mission?
Yeah, the Climate Collective has given out 30 grants over the last year to a value of around $3.5 million, both independently as ourselves and co-founded with Cello Foundation, which is a foundation that belongs to an L1 carbon neutral blockchain. And our grant sizes have varied from around 20,000 to 30,000 to up to $250,000. We focused on three themes so far. So we invested in community just to sort of build this community of emerging entrepreneurs. Science, so trying to prove out how some of these tools and applications have a direct benefit for biodiversity or climate project implementation. And then also focused on builder support. So identifying talent and sort of grow the pool of competent operators and talent in this industry. But we're just about to pass our first anniversary. We've been around for about a year now. So we're tweaking our mandate a little bit. We think we've reached a critical mass of projects and organizations that are building these promising solutions to climate finance. So going into 2023, we think we can have a bigger impact by supporting growth and scale of these solutions to do more of sort of market making. So helping this growing class of entrepreneurs and solutions scale. So we're also kind of expanding our programming as an innovation network to also focus on convening and partnering around some of these market making solutions. So like help to drum up corporate demand, for example. Maybe we create like a demand signal by rallying a group of corporate investors who are interested in investing in these technologies. Or maybe we partner with some capital markets groups that can help us mature the financing side, the supply side, and the investment side a little bit and increase the liquidity around project finance.
So would it be fair to say you're sort of being the incubator now for these entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I wouldn't say like a traditional incubator, maybe, with all the sort of the bells and whistles around a traditional incubatorship program. But I definitely think of ourselves sort of as an ecosystem investor, really trying to unblock some of the challenges that we're still seeing in this market and just trying to figure out and help these existing companies and these existing solutions to go to market.
Okay. So for anyone that's sort of coming into Web3 and becoming a developer or aspires to become a developer, where would you say the critical issues where should they focus their growth on? And particularly, and then I guess the second part of that question is, you know, what would you be willing to fund? I know you said you're sort of going into your current portfolio of companies that you've supported, but what new things are you looking to support in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. Currently, we have members that are working across a couple of different verticals. We have groups that are working on carbon supply side, so like project finance and you know, new methodologies for verifying high quality offsets or carbon removals. And we also have groups that are trying to unlock corporate demand or individual, like B2C demand for carbon credits. Mm-hmm. Then we have some groups that are working on biodiversity and trying to build out instruments to kind of create a new proof of life protocol for biodiversity and organisms living in watersheds around the world. So trying to create this massive database of an inventory, if you will, of biodiversity and organisms. Then we have other groups who are working on digital monitoring, reporting, and verification. Like MRV was never my favorite thing when I worked in as a program manager or international development. But digital MRV is really cool because it uses all of these new technologies like IoT and sensors and like satellite imagery and machine learning models, and then tries to embed that across the carbon project value chain to generate a new generation of high quality carbon credits that will have much higher value, presumably, and have higher impact in terms of its ability to remove or offset carbon. So we actually have members who are kind of across that value chain. We don't have a lot of organizations that are working on carbon accounting across Web3 yet. Carbon accounting mm-hmm. is kind of a big deal in the climate finance space. I think they work with, you know, a lot of corporates and figure out their, you know, assess their scope 1, 2, 3 emissions, and then they prepare kind of action plans for them, and then they sell them offsets for what they can't, you know, mitigate themselves. There's not a lot of groups like that in Web3, and I do think that Web3 has a lot of interesting capabilities that could make such a business more effective and interesting if it's mm-hmm. Web3. Other things that I'm kind of seeing gaps in, we will always need more liquidity providers. Like, capital is always missing. So anyone that is good at kind of generating investments and capital, or service providers. There are a lot of advisory services in the climate finance space, and I haven't seen a lot of those kind of service providers on Web3 yet. And maybe that's because the biggest sort of proposition of Web3 is related to its technology. So it's, you know, it's more, maybe technology is sort of the technology solutions are the ones that are coming first because they have such an obvious advantage to like Web2 counterparts. But yeah, that's something I would like to see going forward.
With service providers, I mean, would that necessarily centralize sort of the work of Web3 then?
Well, I'm not sure about centralized, but I do recognize that one of the value propositions of Web3 is this idea of disintermediation. So instead of having like 30 entities across the carbon market value chain that all take a little cut of the price, leaving mm-hmm. like very little money to the project developer in the beginning. And one of the value propositions of Web3 is to disintermediate that value chain, right? So like to provide a glorified carbon accounting system on top of it, so you don't have to have all these different groups, and you can have verifiable data, so you don't need to have, you know, a consulting group that flies down to the project to verify if the trees are still standing, if you will. So the value proposition of disintermediation, maybe it goes against that one to add service layers to it. But I think for sort of more to attract more a more diversified investor pool. So anything from, you know, endowments, high net worth individuals, family offices, institutional investors, pension funds, private investors. I think you need some financial service firms that help kind of mature this industry a little more.
So if any of our listeners are fit into those categories, how can they interact with you? Or I mean, obviously I can put them in touch with you too, but what's the best way to prepare to meet with you?
You know, so early on in the Climate Collective, they had this almost like tongue twister phrase where we said we're catering to climate curious crypto people and crypto curious climate people. So I'm guessing that the audience of your podcast falls into the second category more of that. So if there's someone out there that is interested in regenerative finance or in Web3 capabilities or in blockchain that knows something about climate change or is passionate about climate change and wants to deploy its talent and its, you know, know-how or time or energy to help us solve the climate crisis, we would love to hear from them. So Climate Collective has a website. It's climatecollective.org. It's pretty simple. I'm on LinkedIn. You can put us in touch. I'm always, always interested in hearing people with great ideas or a passion for climate change who just, you know, wants to join the movement and help out.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting because, like I said at the beginning, not many people understand the technology, but it certainly is important, particularly because there is verifiable data there and you don't have to rely on intermediaries, and you don't need to necessarily trust those intermediaries, which sometimes, you know, it just doesn't work out, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so this is really that evolution. And I think it's an evolution society as we're seeing, you know, you were at Meta, and that was sort of their, at least as the way I understand it, their shift as well.
Yeah.
So great. Well, thank you so much for all of this. I did have another question, but maybe when we have our drinks, I'll ask on how you're sort of managing knowledge. But I think a future podcast might be good for that, because I think there's a really interesting component here on knowledge management and knowledge transfer. And as you guys grow, I think there'll be some really great lessons learned to share on that, especially as Web3.
Yeah. And maybe your audience, actually. So yes, I'll take you up on the drinks. And yes, we'll talk about this at a future point. I would love to hear from the audience of your podcast too, if they have ideas for how to make regenerative finance or blockchain more like approachable for the general climate audience. Because, you know, we need to bring in all the climate experts, the ones who dedicated 30 or 3 years of their lives to solve climate change. They have so much to offer, so much knowledge. We need to bring them along and not make them feel like this is a threatening or crazy new technology. So any ideas or partnerships around that, I am here for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I used to work in knowledge management, so I completely understand that, you know, things don't move on. Like, there's so much to learn from the past and experts that we just lose out by not having effective knowledge transfer and knowledge management programs. So that's where I asked the question. And at least, you know, as a starting point, and this is for everyone to know, now I'm going to start an understanding climate finance sort of group where I'm putting all the podcasts together, and that will actually allow for hopefully rich discussions amongst the people that are accessing the podcast, and they can share their ideas on LinkedIn. So encourage everybody to look out for that. And I'm sure once we have this debate on regenerative finance and ideas, Anna will also be able to contribute and take some of those ideas. So thanks, Anna, so much for coming on the podcast. I know you're doing big and great things coming up, and seriously, I think we should check in after a while, because I really want to see how this evolves.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun to reconnect and have this conversation. It is, we only progress together. So this is wonderful. I really like this.
Yeah, me too. So thanks everyone for listening to the podcast. We look forward to sharing the next episode with you soon. In the meantime, like I said, my name is Fahim Nurali. This is the Understanding Climate Finance podcast, and it's a production of the Embassy of Canada in Washington, D.C. So until next time, thank you.